Hey everyone, how's it going? This is Max from Citywide Blackout, your home for music, movies, and a whole lot more. Kicking off the show, I'll be talking to author Peter Darrow for his new book, Wise Millennial, A Field Guide to Thriving in Modern Life. This book looks at the concept of millennials and how they can grow and find their own path, and Peter's pretty familiar with this whole thing because he's dealt with a lot in his life. He started a restaurant in New York City, and a short time later had to actually close it down. And we talk a lot about the lessons from that, his more personal experiences, and what it was like putting this all out for the entire world to see. Following that, we'll be talking to rapper Truell for his upcoming album, Truology, A New Beginning. Author Peter Darrow, he's got a new book out called A Wise Millennial, A Field Guide to Thriving in Modern Life. And Peter, to kick things off, let's talk about the notion of what a millennial is, because it's become kind of a pun these days. You know, there's a million videos about millennials, how they're lazy, entitled, don't know how to work. Is any of that, in your experience, is any of that accurate at all? How did this all come about?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So millennials, I guess, technically are defined as anyone born from 1981 to 1996, but more commonly just the 80s and 90s. I think that, you know, there are some truths to that. I think millennials love to challenge the status quo. They like to ask why. They like to challenge, you know, why has it been done this way? Is there a better way? Could we do something differently? And oftentimes this can easily come across as being arrogant or lazy. Certainly millennials love, they want instant gratification, instant happiness. And so they just expect things on demand. And then when they realize that most of the world doesn't work like that, especially their own happiness and love and dating and lots of other things, then they get frustrated. And so people label them as arrogant. I think that millennials in particular, especially with social media and Instagram, and this is, you know, we could talk about this at length, but certainly they like the shiny finished product, but they don't want to put in the work to see how to achieve it, or they're not really willing to see what's involved from getting from point A to point Z. They just want to go immediately to point Z. And so oftentimes bypasses the whole process, and so oftentimes people that also gets viewed as arrogant or as just wanting something immediately without really understanding all the steps that are involved, and that things take time. They don't happen overnight, whether it be friendships, relationships, business. You know, for every one overnight success, there are a million failures.
Let's take apart some of the things you talked about. So the notion, first off, of millennials like challenging the status quo, questioning things, I think we've especially seen a lot of that in politics recently, because the millennials are becoming a very like politically involved, politically motivated, and definitely the notion of the instant gratification, that I think is kind of like a product of the time, though, because, you know, it used to be everything you wanted to do took some time. Now it's boom, boom, boom. You want to like buy something, boom, you order it, it's there in like 2 days. You want to get a movie, boom, you download it, it's there. I think that the millennials are almost like, they're not born like that. It's something that's kind of come about because of just the world that we live in now. Like you said, especially with like dating too. It used to be if you want to date, you go out, you go to the bars, you go to the clubs. Now there's like 100,000 apps out there.
Yeah, we created this, right? Exactly. I mean, who created Facebook? Millennials did. Who created, you know, social media? We did. So we have to take ownership and responsibility for that. I think that there's nothing wrong with convenience. So I want to, you know, be clear on that. I think what I talk about in my book is that in order to really I'm all about sustainability. You know, you want to avoid really high highs and really low lows. And having this kind of these huge emotional shifts is not sustainable and doesn't really lead to happiness that I have found. And so what I am a big proponent of is finding sustainability. And so there's a difference between convenience and things that are going to be a part of your daily life that have lasting effect. Wanting to rent a movie is different than wanting to, you know, reduce your risk of heart disease or lower your cholesterol or have a meaningful relationship, or move in your career, move up in your career. Those are not, that's not like renting a DVD. So there's nothing wrong with convenience, but I think you have to really parse through what are the things that is just, you know, for entertainment and what is actually part of my lifestyle. And I think that's what we need to focus on, or what are the things that really are my core values that are really important to me in my lifestyle for a long period of time.
How did you find your core values? Was it something that you just kind of knew, like from a young age, or did you kind of like discover this about yourself by just like learning and growing?
Yeah. So I went through, and part of the inspiration for the book was that I went through a very difficult period in my life where I thought I was king of the world, and I felt like I was living my dream life. And then kind of everything got ripped from underneath me. I my father passed away from myeloma cancer. I closed my first business, a restaurant that I owned in Manhattan. And I lost the girlfriend I thought I was going to marry or wanted to spend the rest of my life with. And that all kind of happened all around the same time. So I went through a very reflective period where I felt very lost. And I didn't feel like I really had an identity, and I lost all passion. And I really questioned everything I had ever been taught. I mean, almost like I was being reborn. I literally kind of wrote down everything that I was some rule in my head that my parents taught me, or that society or my friends taught me, and I kind of very systematically went line by line, and I just said, you know, is this something that really serves me? Is this something that I really believe in? Or is this something that was told to me by other people, that some rule of society that I'm supposed to follow? And this goes back to what we were talking about before, where millennials love to challenge kind of these you know, dated social mores. And it was a very empowering process. And through that, it was very liberating and empowering, because I really felt like I was in control and really got to decide for myself what is important, what are the things from my childhood that I want to keep, and what are the things that I want to let go of. But it's hard. I mean, to really look in the mirror and be honest and open about your strengths and weaknesses is a emotionally challenging process, especially for your ego. So you really have to embrace that process. And I think you come out with a much more clear vision of who you are and who you want to be in life.
Okay. Now, your book deals with the subject of millennials, but is it really geared just towards them? What can someone who was born either before or after this generation gain from reading it?
Yeah, so it is certainly, that's my main focus, because I'm a millennial and therefore I understand my generation, or I would like to believe I do. although nothing surprises me, let me tell you. All kidding aside, I think that I want to be a bridge builder for other generations, younger and older, to really understand each other, because here's the reality: we're all on the same ride. We're all on the same ride of life, and we're all, you know, we all want the same things. At least I believe so. And I'm a big proponent of love and happiness. And it's just a question of how do you achieve that? And so I think there's a lot of, for the younger generation, I think there's a lot of tips and pointers and failures and mistakes and lessons I've learned that I think hopefully will be helpful and insightful. And at least even empowering to say you're not alone. Sometimes it can, especially with this whole digital world, it can feel like a lonely place that people, you know, young people in particular really want community, a sense of community. And I'm hoping that by reading this book, they will feel like that they're not alone and that there are other people who have gone through similar experiences. For the older generation, I think it, you know, they often want to, there's a lot of books about leadership and millennials in the workplace. That is not really the focus of this book. There are people who do that very well, and certainly I look up to. For me, this is a more introspective process for the older generation to just appreciate how we got to where we are, and the fact that millennials are not as bad as they seem. It's so funny. I'll talk to older people, and I'll use the word millennial, and immediately, like, their mind goes off. They already have this kind of preconceived notion, and I don't even have to do any talking. They just already have this kind of misconception of what a millennial represents.
Yeah.
So if anything, I want to challenge some of those dated kind of, you know, social misconceptions.
Mm-hmm. I've actually had the chance to work with millennials. So my day job is working as a news editor, and I've actually had millennials freelance for me. And I gotta say, they are some of the hardest working people that I've ever come across, you know? So I think that millennials almost, some of them at least, may be approaching this as something that they have to prove. Like, okay, everything's we're lazy, that we're whiners, that we're all like entitled brats. I think the millennials are almost taking this as a challenge to say, you know what, we can do these things.
There might be some kind of overcompensation effect.
Yeah.
You know, like a parent that says, you know, you're not allowed to do this, you're not supposed to do this, and then you, of course, you go do it, or you do the opposite of what they tell you. Just, mm-hmm. You know, I'll show you. But I think with millennials especially, there is, because, I mean, there's a lot of reasons for this, but because people switch careers a lot, and we have the power of the internet and e-commerce, millennials really want to find passion in what they're doing. I think it's really important for millennials, I would say more so than previous generations, that they really want to find meaning. And so oftentimes millennials will be unhappy in a job if they don't feel like it's fulfilling or meaningful. And so it's very binary, actually. It's almost like either a millennial loves their job and is super passionate about it and is giving it their all and wants to be challenged, or they hate their job and they don't really like what they're doing, and you know they want to switch to something else because they're not getting meaning. I think that for millennials, they really want meaning in whatever they're doing. And so it's very like hot or cold. It's either I love and I'm super passionate about what I'm doing, or I really hate it, but it's a paycheck and it's helping me get through my day.
Now, when you decided to write this book, I'm curious, was there one like pivotal thing that happened that made you say, I want to do this? Or was it kind of born from what you went through both personally and professionally?
It's a good question. I think it's a combination of things. I mean, I'd always wanted to write a book for a long time, although it would have been a very different book. I just think having these life experiences gives you real things to talk about that's relatable. You know, 10 years ago, it would have been an unrelatable book. Mm-hmm. And I think that by having life experiences, it gives you more perspective. So I think it was a combination of certainly all these things happening at once, this very kind of condensed, difficult period in my life. I also think that, as we touched upon before, as I say in the book, it can feel like a lonely world sometimes. And I think that, listen, I was very lucky and I'm very humbled to grow up in a privileged environment in New York City. And I think that oftentimes that can get categorized or stereotyped or misunderstood. And so, to be honest, I think it was born out of partly my own frustration of not feeling like I'm understood, or that Peter grew up in a privileged, in a somewhat privileged environment, therefore he has no real problems, he's not allowed to have a voice. And the truth is, like, there's millions of people, like, we all aspire to grow up in a comfortable environment. I mean, as a parent, you want to give your kids more than what you had growing up. Isn't that, like, the goal? Exactly. It's so funny to me. Like, we're all trying to do better, to leave something behind. So why are we punishing or scrutinizing the people that are the beneficiaries of what we worked? I had a very hardworking father, and so the point is that there's nothing wrong with, you don't need to shy away from being in a comfortable position. You don't have to literally, it doesn't mean I have sympathy and compassion for all humans. I think it's about, you can't choose what family you're born into, but you can choose how you conduct yourself and how you treat other people and how you what good you want to do with the world. So that's kind of a long answer, but the point is, there's nothing wrong with growing up in a semi-comfortable environment. I mean, there are millions and millions of people that are. It doesn't mean that I don't have sympathy or compassion, and certainly it doesn't mean that I don't want to work hard. The reality is, as an entrepreneur, it's really hard. I mean, you have to, there's no guarantees of success. You don't get a steady paycheck. So the fact of the matter is, I have to make my way just as anybody else. And so I think that it was a combination of all of these feelings of just saying, I know I'm not alone. I know there are other people out there. And at the end of the day, none of this really matters. It doesn't matter how much you could have all the money in the world. If you die of a heart attack at 50, then what's the point? And I think for me, it was really a rejection of a lot of these, things that I was told growing up, that this is all important, that there's some formula, you have to go to these schools and work these kinds of jobs and belong to these kinds of country clubs in order to be successful, as if there's some definition of what success is. And I realize, in having lost my father and just having these experiences, none of that stuff really matters. I mean, yes, obviously we want to be able to put food on the table and have shelter, but beyond that, honestly, just enjoy every single day, because you don't know how long it's going to last, and we're just all so lucky to be alive.
I really like your point. Like, personally, for me, I would rather be poor and happy than to be rich and miserable. It's not about the money, it's not about the cars, it's about experiences, it's about the life you have, and if you're truly happy with it. Going back a bit to the professional hurdles you had, you started the restaurant. You had to close it down. What was your takeaway from this, and how did this help to kind of shape you going forward?
Yeah, I could talk about this for hours, but I'll be succinct. Don't start a restaurant. I mean, that's the short end.
Well, yeah, definitely that.
Everyone's like, oh, I'm going to have a bar one day. I'll put my name on. It's like this kind of image of the 1950s. And, we just don't live in that world anymore, and especially with rent costs. I mean, the only way to make, I mean, I'm kind of jumping around, but the only way it makes economical sense is if you own the building. Mm. If you own the real estate, then sure, open up a restaurant. But to be paying the rent prices, especially in a city like Boston or New York or any metropolitan city, it's so hard to make ends meet. I mean, the margins are so slim. And so what did I learn? I mean, there are easier ways to make money. There's lots of ways to make money in life than, working in a brick and mortar operation, because at the end of the day, you can only make money while you're open, and you're so hyper local, only the people that are in a quarter mile radius of you. If someone knows about my restaurant in California, that's great, but that's not going to help me. And so having an online store, getting into e-commerce or any kind of business where it's just you don't have so much overhead and fixed costs. Everyone, I know a lot of people have a fantasy of like in their head of owning their own restaurant, and you know they just want to be able to serve customers and make people happy, and that's great. But like there is so much more that goes into it that any owner will tell you. And for, you know, for every one appreciative customer, you know, there's many that are going to find something to complain about.
Mm, yeah. Well, running a business is of course a huge, huge undertaking. And I think anyone who wants to start one, you definitely need to do your homework ahead of time or talk to folks like you who have gone through it and have actually had to close things down, because that's unfortunately a very likely outcome.
But yeah, and on that point, you know, I just think failures, you know, listen, you learn by failing.
Yeah.
You don't learn, you know, I mean, that's important, because I made a lot of mistakes, and I'll be the first to admit it. I'm not here to sugarcoat anything, but, you know, certainly I know what not to do by making all those mistakes. If I were in theory to do it again, which I'm not inclined to.
Yeah, never again, right? Future,
But you know, but it doesn't matter. You can apply those business lessons to many different other industries.
Okay. When it came to telling your personal story in this book, did you kind of shy from that? Was it difficult to talk about what you had gone through?
It's a great question, and many people have asked me that. I made a commitment to myself early on. You know, I'll give you an example. You know, I talk about the day that my father passed away. And I talk about being in the hospital room with him alone when he's basically in a coma and on his, you know, about to die. And I talk about my last conversation with my father. And as I was writing, I was like, you know, is anything private? Do I really want to share this? Is there anything that is sacred that I just think is too personal that other people don't need to know about? And then I kind of realized, and then I went back to, well, why am I doing this in the first place? And I made a commitment to myself that I wasn't going to cherry pick the truth. You know, if you're going to do something, you really have to commit to it. And I have nothing to be ashamed of. If people are going to judge you no matter what you do in life. And so for me, this is about really finding and connecting with like-minded people who appreciate those core values. And one of my core values is honesty and openness and transparency. And so not everyone's going to agree or like the lifestyle decisions I've made. I don't agree with or like all the lifestyle decisions I've made. And I continue to, you know, all I can do, we're all flawed human beings. All we can do in life is make mistakes, and learn from those mistakes. And I look forward to making future mistakes, because that's inevitable. But I think that, yeah, I really just made a commitment that I need to be honest and open, and show people, listen, here's the logic that went into my decision making. Here's what happened, for better or worse. And here's the lesson that I learned from it. And so I think that you have to really commit whatever you're doing in life. You have to commit yourself to it 100%. And otherwise, if you're just sugarcoating the truth, then you're being disingenuous to yourself and really defeats the whole message of the book. If I'm trying to, you know, you have to be the change that you want to see in the world. And, you know, and I'm a big believer in that. And I think that if I expect, how can I expect others to be honest and open and vulnerable if I'm not willing to demonstrate those qualities myself? So you can't, there's no double standard here. You have to, you know, I expect nothing more than what I give to myself.
Okay. All right. And what's been the response since the other book came out? I know it's only been out for like a few weeks now, but have you gotten any feedback from readers?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not, and I want to be, you know, humble and honest here. I mean, the feedback we've gotten is really great, and we've gotten really great reviews, both from professional independent reviewers as well as readers. And so I'm very proud of myself in the sense that, and this is something that I work on, you know, I think that we don't give ourselves enough credit sometimes. It's not about you know, gloating, but, you know, I'm very proud of the book I wrote, and I think I wrote a good quality book that is helpful for people. I think to your question, it's just hard to get the word out there. You know, I want everybody to read it. You know, people are in, especially with social media, people are just inundated with stuff all the time. It's like, it's very hard to break through. Hopefully your show will help me do that and, move the needle here a little bit. You know, I think that people find it, I think people appreciate the vulnerability and the honesty and openness, mm-hmm. even if they don't understand or even if they can't fully relate to the individual circumstances. I think that much of the feedback I've received has been appreciative.
Okay, all right. Now, Peter, one of the things I was also really, really curious to ask you is, what growth do millennials need to either push themselves to another level or maybe to escape the labels and the stereotypes that people have kind of saddled them with?
Yeah, I think that for me, what I have found, especially having been in New York my whole life, pretty much, is you really have to focus on detachment. Mm-hmm. And for me, to find true happiness, and this is kind of the core theme, underlying theme of the book, is that in order to find true happiness, you have to really detach yourself from a lot of the messed up values that we downloaded from our parents and from society, and to really find our true meaningful inner self, and to develop a strong sense of self. And I think that millennials in particular lack a sense of self. They're so worried about being judged or judging others. They're more worried about the how something looks, the impression of success, rather than actually how to achieve success. They're more worried about the appearance of status. I think you have to really let go of all of that and really focus on yourself and just focus on who you are, what are your core values, who do you want to be, and not worry about and not really care about what other people think. I mean, you have to really ask yourself, why am I believing this? Why am I doing this? You have to look at your behavior and say, does this really benefit me? Or am I doing this to serve other people, whether it be my friends or my family? Who am I really doing this for? And if it's not yourself, you know, then you really need to question whether it's worth doing.
You know, I also imagine that it is hard for millennials to not care what people think. You know, it's kind of hard to like shuck that because they're just surrounded by the judging and the labels and the everything else. It can be kind of hard to say, you know what, I'm just going to ignore that. But you're right though. They got to focus on being the best, whoever they are. So I think it's sort of a testament to that you can't know what millennials are capable of until you actually see them do it.
Yeah, I mean, first off, you could start your own business. Anyone can start their own business.
No, thank you.
You know, you may not want to, and that's totally fine. You know, there's no should in life. I mean, that's the point, is that there's no, you know, you can't compare yourself to other people in terms of that's not going to make you happy. You have to find out, you know, as one of the things that my father always said that I believe in is you will only be successful in the things that you're passionate for. So you have to really determine, what are you passionate about? What's going to get you excited? What's going to get you out of bed every morning? What's going to keep you motivated in the long term, not short term? You know, if you're constantly chasing just whatever's on the horizon, you're just never going to find it. I think that you really have to just think about what you want to do with your life and who you are.
Okay. And what do you want to do with your life, sir?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm trying to figure that out right now, right? We're all on the same journey. The future isn't scripted. I I, you know, for the last several months, my focus has been getting as many eyeballs on this book as possible to get my message out there and for people to just at least understand and appreciate, you know, all of my stories and all of the lessons I've learned. I can't do the work for you. I mean, all I can do is kind of open the door and hopefully show people that there is an alternative path of living life. Ultimately, you know, you have to do the work. But my dream would be to either go into public speaking or motivational speaking or build some kind of platform. I've thought about maybe doing millennial workshops. I think that there are so many basic things that are lacking in our generation, even just basic communication skills. People love to hide behind emojis and avatars as ways of – they don't even really understand human how to communicate with one another. Oftentimes they'll just ghost, whether it's dating or what, even just, you know, daily responsibilities, you know, people love to just ghost. And it's just not, it's not how you achieve result, long lasting result.
Now, we've talked a couple times about like dating, about like the dating apps and whatnot. One of the things I was really curious about is, now I grew up prior to all this stuff happening. As someone who's kind of grown up where this is a little more the norm, how does this impact your attempt to form relationships?
Yeah, I love that question. It's hard, and I recently deleted dating apps on my phone, or most of them. I mean, there's a lot, you know.
There's so many.
Well, yeah, because they all represent different things. Yeah. You know, I think that, listen, dating apps, like anything, there are amazing people on apps, and there are really bad people on apps and not great people. There are amazing people in real life, and there are bad people in real life. You know, I think it's, what is your intention? What do you want to do with it? It doesn't matter if it's an app or if it's in real life. For me, I think that certainly this notion that there's always someone better, or that you can, you know, that you're just finding your next girlfriend or boyfriend is just one swipe away, really robs you of your identity and just kind of is make you happy, because you really are just, you feel like you're constantly chasing something. It leads you down this road where no one is ever good enough. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that it leads to happiness. Mm-hmm. So, you know, or like there's, you know, all these check boxes that, like, that, you know, this person has to be perfect and has to meet all of these boxes. And if they hit 39 out of 40, then you fail. And sorry, I'm going to move on to somebody else. If switching relationships were easy, then the inherent value of relationships would be meaningless. Mm-hmm. If I could just remove someone and go find someone else. So, yeah, it's about taking time. It really takes time to get to know someone. And that doesn't mean there aren't success stories on dating apps. There are. But, you know, you have to – it's just like you have to treat it like meeting someone anywhere in life.
Yeah. Yeah, sooner or later you actually have to meet the person and have a real life conversation.
Yeah, connections are made in real life.
Yeah, go and do it. You know, like, you know, the whole, like, so everything's nice. It's like a nice little tool, but you gotta understand that sooner or later you're gonna actually have to meet this person, and then there's no sanitizing your responses. There's no planning your emails. There's no taking time to write things out carefully. It is boom, boom, boom. So
Max, do you know how many girls I meet that tell me, I feel lost? I hear this all the time. Peter, I feel lost.
Lost in like the grand cosmic sense, or lost in the relationship sense?
Either, both. Yeah. I mean, because to your point, they're just meeting people. They're just getting pulled in 100 directions, 1,000 directions. They're moving at 100 miles an hour. They're like a chicken with their head cut off. They're just always searching for something and ultimately are not happy. I mean, I hear this all the time and I feel bad, you know, but that's why you've got to really slow things down and focus on, you know, quality, not quantity. And listen, I'm guilty as charged too. I mean, I went through a period where I was hyper dating, and I talk about this in the book. I mean, there's nothing to be ashamed of that, but what I found through that experience was that I was still unhappy. I was meeting all these women and, you know, beautiful, successful, motivated women, and I wasn't feeling fulfilled.
You know, I did the exact same thing actually several years ago. And I like you, I was dating, you know, a bunch of different women, meeting all these wonderful people. And this is this was back when I was living in Boston. The best part of that for me was stopping. It was too much at once. It was impossible to make any meaningful connections. And yeah. When I put the brakes on, I was like, okay, that's better. And now I totally just take it way more slowly.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, if you're getting over a relationship, I mean, it's good to like get back in the dating game. I mean, they do serve a purpose. I don't judge where you meet your significant other. There's nothing wrong with meeting on a dating app. I just think that statistically, it's you know, there's a much more stickiness factor when you meet someone in real life.
Exactly. I want to talk a bit about the writing process for you. Now, I know that this is all about like helping your fellow millennials, but in writing the book, did you get any more insight about what it means to be a millennial or about who you are as a person?
Yeah, it was a very therapeutic process. I mean, you know, writing a book is not like writing a research paper. You don't just sit down and like bang out 20 pages. And, you know, it's a very emotionally challenging process, especially when you're talking about really difficult stories of your life. And, you know, I would be deep in thought, and then things, it's amazing. It's a very, you know, things would come up that I was like, I can't believe I remember this. And it's really hard because you want to convey what you're thinking in the moment, but you have to relitigate all of this trauma and relive these episodes in your head. I think some of the big takeaways for me that I learned through this process was that I think everything has pros and cons. I think that you just have to express compassion and love for yourself and others. And for me, that was the biggest takeaway, was not bashing yourself or beating yourself up on the head. Oh, I should be doing this. Oh, you know, I'm 30 years old, I'm 35, I'm 26, I should be a CEO of a company by now, I should be running a business, I should be making X amount of money. You know, it's like, that's not going to get you anywhere. And then ultimately, you are exactly where you should be, mm-hmm. wherever that is.
Yeah, hey, I am 38, and I have done none of those things, and yet I'm cool with it. You know, I'm where I need to be. I'm happy for the first time in a while, so I think it's like you say, it's not about the age, it's about what you're doing with it, you know, it's about...
And you're very inspiring. I mean, I couldn't be doing what you do, so, you know, it's inspiring to see people like you.
Well, thank you. Was it tough to walk away from this, to say, the book's done, no more rewrites, no more edits, we're done with it, let's get it out there?
Yeah, I mean, I was editing, you know, up until the latest that I was allowed to, that I could. Well, it's little minor things, you know, nothing major, but,
this is like your baby. This is your child, and you can't send your child into the world without that, without everything that they can get, you know?
Yeah. And it's never done, you know, it's never perfect. And I think that's part of this process, is like, you can't seek perfection. Nothing is perfect. You just have to get it to a point where you're proud of something. And also, you know, it's like, it's your life story, right? It's like, if someone reads a fiction book or reads, you know, Game of Thrones and says, oh, I don't like this. You know, the character development isn't great. You know, that's fine. But when I'm the character,
yeah.
You know, it's like, it's a little different. It's my life that you don't like. So, you know, I definitely take it more personally a little bit. To answer your question, there was definitely, you know, as with anything, you launch something into the world and then you come off this emotional high, and then you kind of come crashing down and you're like, oh shoot, what next? You know, like, what, I just had this huge emotional outburst. And what do I need? Well, like, how am I going to top that? Or what am I going to do that's different? And it's not about topping anything. It's about finding your path and maybe doing something that builds on it. So yeah, I'm excited for what lies in the future. I don't know what that is, but I certainly hope that I can use this as a platform to build on.
How would you like the millennial generation to be remembered?
Oh man. So good questions, Max. Like I said, there everything has pros and cons, and I think that every generation has goods and bads. And the millennial generation, for better or for worse, has definitely changed the way that we operate. It's changed the way that we look at problems, and has really challenged a lot of these kind of social, as I said, social mores and social, you know, societal rules. And when it comes to gender equality, gender identity, you know, there's a lot of positives. I certainly think that when it comes to leadership, there are some millennials that I think aren't willing to put in the consistency. You know, anyone can be a leader, but you really have to be able to see long term. Mm-hmm. And be very disciplined. I think that millennials in particular really lack self-discipline and structure. And I'm, like I said, I'm a millennial. I'm guilty of that too sometimes. But I think that you really have to focus on what is important to you. So how do I want millennials to be remembered? Man, I'm gonna, you know, tomorrow I'm gonna wake up and I'm gonna like say, I wish I had said that. I'm gonna like think of an answer, and I was like, yeah, you know, I really wish I had said that. I don't know. I think that I want them to be known as people who are willing to change things and that are willing to be open and not and willing to view humans as equal. And I know that that sometimes sounds like a fairy tale or sounds like, you know, very aspirational. But I really think that millennials want things. I really think they want things to be egalitarian and people to be treated equally and fairly. Obviously, we know that's not always how it works out, and people break rules, and there are backroom deals. And but I think that they, as a generation, we work toward a fair society and for people to be treated equally in terms of respect, regardless of what you do for a living or what your job is, whether you're a janitor or teacher, you know, to take pride and meaning in your work and in your life. And I think that is something that I want the millennial generation to be proud of.
Yeah. One thing I've seen with millennials is I think they are in a sense explorers, but not in the sense of like exploring like outer space or the oceans. But no, they're kind of exploring inside. I think that this generation more than others, frankly, that they've been spending a lot of time exploring who they are, what they mean, and what they want out of life. I think that sort of contributes to the human whole, you know? Like, each generation kind of went in a different direction, almost had a different purpose or goal, and for millennials, it's more of an internal one. And I think that's kind of what's led to them striving for more, like, as you said, gender equality, racial equality, sort of seeing what it means to be, you know, Peter, what it means to be Max. They're kind of exploring that part. That's my own perspective, though. I could be dead wrong, but this is kind of what I...
No, think. I agree with it. I mean, I do a lot of meditation, yoga. I try to practice mindfulness. I think it's more than a buzzword. I mean, I really think that, you know, where millennials are tired of their parents bashing them on the head, telling them that they're not good enough, or that, you know, they're doing things wrong, or that we're making bad life decisions. And, I think that they're just tired of being told that they're doing life incorrectly, as if there's some rule to some formula to life.
Where's this formula? I want to find it. I must have.
Yeah,
it.
Apparently all the older generations have this formula down, and they've all nailed it perfectly.
Because
they're perfectly happy.
Yeah, I think I'm actually part of like the last generation, because I was born in '80, And I can tell you, dude, if there's a formula, I haven't got it. I was not part of the meeting for that formula.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I don't know where to put it. Where do we put the formula? But Peter, man, it has been awesome talking to you, sir. Where can folks learn more about you?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find the book on Amazon or barnesandnoble.com online, at wisemillennial.com, or my Instagram at wisemillennial. That's probably the best way to learn about me.
All right. Peter Darrow, thank you so much, and look forward to hearing more about the book down the road.
Thank you. I appreciate all your time, Max. It's been a lot of fun.
Hi, this is singer Kate Eppers, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout.
Let's face it, everyone. Until we get those mind reading chips installed, nothing is going to make a better first impression than what we can see and smell. Whether you're hanging out at someone's house or on that first date, the last thing you want to think is, what's that smell? That's why I recommend working with my pal, Kaylee Young. She's a consultant with the sites Sensi and Perfectly Posh and can help you put your best foot forward. Kaylee will work with you. No BS and no pressuring you to get that money. Your success is her success. So what are you waiting for? Contact Kaylee at 479-431-1779 or younglove4118@gmail.com and do it now.
All right, guys, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll be talking to rapper True L. He's got a lot to talk about for this one. He's got a new album out called Trueology, A New Beginning. This is available June 8th and captures 16 years of music experience with some amazing stories. In addition to that, he'll be releasing Passing the Torch later on this month, which is a collection of singles from 30 different artists that he has helped produce. In the meantime, we've got a song for you from the band Noble Jax called Lights Out. Welcome back, folks. This is Citywide Blackout, your home for music, movies, and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Max Bowen, and now I am joined by the one and only True L. We are here to talk new music. We are here to talk labels. We're here to talk everything. But let us start off, sir, with your debut album, Truology, The New Beginning, happening June 8th. This is an album 14 years in the making. Holy crap.
Well, the EP with me and Joel Santana is 14 years in the making. My debut album, you could pretty much say that's like 15, 16 years in the making, because I've been rapping for that long.
Yeah. Even longer. Oh my God. 15 years worth of music all in one shot.
I've been writing music since I was 12, but when I was 16, that was when I put out my first mixtape, Mad Appearance the Streets. That was 2003.
Oh my God. What a time that was, huh?
Yeah, it was things was real, real different back then.
Yeah. Well, how so, man? I mean, what like what were some of the big changes, like, musically?
Well, back then I wasn't as polished as I am now, so like I was just getting into it. I didn't have barcodes, and I wasn't legitimized.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I was recording on people's beats and stuff. All I knew how to do was put my music on beats and get it recorded in the studio, then take it to your local bootlegger or somebody who know how to make CDs, and me just get it out to the people in the streets. So I didn't know nothing about that until I say about when I did my mixtape with Hell Rail, and I took it to this guy named Marco. He used to his rap name is Twice Style, but he owned a clothing line called Antonio Saldi. He had Samuel L. Jackson wearing his clothing in the Shaft movie. And then he had the Lox wearing his clothing on the Money, Power, Respect debut album. So he's a person from my city who actually was signed to Benzino at a point in the time. And he introduced me to having my first barcode, because the barcode was ran through his clothing store where my mixtape was being sold at. But my cousin is the one that know about the barcode, but he's the one that actually gave me his barcode to use. So eventually when I got it all down packed, that's when I got my own barcode.
That's really cool, man. That's really cool. And now here you are 16 years later. You're still in the game. You're still doing the stuff. What has kept you in it for so many years?
Being a fan of hip hop.
Yeah, just like you.
I love
it.
Music sets my soul on fire.
So let's talk about the album. Let's talk about, you know, like you said, this thing is like 16 years in the making. How would you define it? You know, like how do you compile 16 years of experiences into one album?
That's a good question. Life experiences. If you got to live these last 16 years of trying to be where I'm at today, it would give you a clear indication on who Truel really is. And this is why I made the album, named it Truology, The New Beginning, because it's like an autobiography.
Cool, man. All right. What are some of the stories that folks listening to this are going to experience?
Well, one of my favorite songs on the album is called Zariah, mm-hmm. which actually that's my daughter's name.
Oh,
it stands for beauty in Arabic, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm basically talking about from, you know, the time she was born, how becoming a father made me better as a man. And, you know, so that's one of the great songs. Another story is actually the Truology. And the reason why I say that is because of the way I did the introduction when I'm saying, welcome to my Truology. So it's like you're entering a story. And then when you see the video, I bring you through where I grew up at. And then that's letting you know, as a consumer, you're like, oh, okay. That's his Truology. Mm-hmm. His Truology stands for pages out my notebook.
Oh, okay.
That's the catch to it.
Oh, okay, man. Okay. I wanna like see this notebook someday, you know, because I imagine it's, you know.
But see, you know, it's funny. I say pages out my notebook, but I have notebooks.
Oh, multiples, huh? Nice.
I have trash bags of lyrics, like, over the year. I wrote, like, 800 songs that I haven't even recorded. Like, I used to write fluently. Like, mm-hmm. One of my favorite rappers, one of them is Tupac, but my favorite rapper of all time is Jay-Z. Mm. I picked up a habit of how Tupac used to be, like, as far as him writing. I used to write 7 songs a day.
Damn.
But now it's like, as an artist, you tend to get writer's block. So you got to sit down and sometimes you got to lock yourself into a studio, or just you have to step away from the music for a little bit. This is how Eminem does it. He's another one of my favorite rappers. Mm-hmm. He said sometimes he doesn't even watch the news. So when he tried to come back into the game, he was so lost in time, he didn't really know what was going on. So sometimes you got to sit yourself down to read up to what's going on, because you got to sound up to date. You don't want to sound outdated.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I don't know how I could not watch the news, you know? Like, that seems kind of interesting, like, choice to make. But hey, you know, whatever works. But,
so you want to know, I just came up with something. I okay. think Eminem doesn't watch the news because it's depressing.
There's that. It is depressing.
If you think about it, if you turned on the news every day, 7 days out the week, and you done seen some destruction, some death, or just some whatever the case may be, it's just it gives off bad energy.
Yeah, I mean, hell, we just had another school shooting in Colorado. Almost 20 years after the same thing happened in Columbine.
After Columbine, yeah. and then the history repeats it. That, you know, I'm not going to even say history, because that's not, well, I mean, it's not good history.
No.
I'm not, that's history, that's deja vu.
Exactly. You got it, man.
Because history to me, that took place, something good that took place, and it goes down to history. I don't want to say, oh, Columbine shooting went down in history. Like, that's nothing, there's nothing positive about that. That's nothing we're going to look at 20 years from now and study about it in school. Like, no, it's, when you hear a story like that, it's depressing.
Exactly. So, yeah, well, I think we just figured it out, man. This is why, because he probably turns it on, looks at it and says, okay, screw this, you know, and just brings him down.
Yeah, like, when you watch the news, besides the weather, to me, I would want to learn something. Like, yeah. I would rather watch the Discovery Channel over the news.
Exactly. You know what? You're right. I remember the news is supposed to inform you. Instead, it's, oh, what's Trump, you know, tweeting about this time? What's this thing? What's that thing? It's like, man, I don't feel any smarter. I don't feel any smarter at all. I'm gonna, like I said, I'm going to watch the Discovery Channel, learn something. Oh, this thing is cool.
Yeah, it doesn't do nothing for me. Like, if you're talking about some history or something, if you're educating me, I will watch that.
Nice.
But
nice.
Something that's just going to be depressing.
Definitely, man. Now, I want to go back a little bit, because you mentioned going from, like, doing, like, 7 songs a day. You don't do as much anymore, writer's block being a thing. I'm curious, when you get blocked on something, when you're trying to write a song, you just get nothing. How do you deal with that? What do you do?
See, music is based on how you feel. So when you go through real life situations, trials and tribulations, you might not be in the mood to write. Because when you're feeling good, when you're in the mood, you write your best. So when you're feeling down, you know, you might not be able to give your all, depending on, you might not be able to give your all to, like, a club song. But if you're talking about, like, say, hypothetically speaking, for example, if one of my family members just passed away I'm not going to be able to give my best to a club song.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have to sit down and write a rest in peace song, yeah, you're gonna feel my pain. You're gonna hear my pain because I'm really gonna put it down to that paper. You're gonna be like, wow, like that was like real touching. You know what I'm saying?
I get you.
It's just it all depends on how I'm feeling. Nice. You know.
Now do you do a song like every day, or do you like work on a song every day?
Yeah, you know, there's well now, I'm always doing something music every day. Mm-hmm. Whether it's listening to a beat, I might not record it right then and there, or I might feel like, oh, I had something that to that rhythm or something. Because I did a lot of writing when I was incarcerated. A lot of the stuff was without beats, and then some of them I would make beats on by myself. So a lot of lyrics, I'd be like, wow, I mean. One day I'm going to find something that fits that. And these are lyrics that's not copywritten. No, you know what? I wrote 75 songs, and I did send all those in for copyrights. But it's songs that's not out yet. It's lyrics not recorded yet. So I do say to myself, I'm going to find a production. I'm going to save that. And then when I find a production for the vocals, for the lyrics, that's when I'm gonna release that. Mm. And then sometimes I might go back and be like, man, I wrote this 5 years ago. My feeling towards it was different because I always sound better than I did the last time. So I might go change a line or a few lines in it just to critique it. The people don't know, but I know it's old to me. So, you know, I change around and try to make it sound updated.
I get you. Cool, man. Yeah. That's cool. Now, you mentioned that you're always around music, and that leads to something else I want to talk about. You also have your own label, Fatal Entertainment. And yes, you've actually got this, I just see something you've got this other mixtape out called Pass the Torch, which is the unsigned talent mixtape.
That passed the let me tell you something. Shout out to my manager, Marie Cawthorn, and Chrissy Prescotto. She's a promoter from New Hampshire. And what happened was my big homie, Joel Santana, he's still being released, unsigned talent mixtapes. And he happened to make like $20,000 off of a unsigned talent mixtape for selling slots at 400 a pop. So once I was promoting the mixtape, she was just like, she gave me the idea like, well, why don't you do your own mixtape? And I thought about it before, but you know where a lot of people was giving me a hassle the last time I tried to do a mixtape. I was going to call it Pen Life. But then I'm like, you know, that's just one area. So when I came up with this and I saw that it just basically went through the roof and I put $100, man, that makes it. I make money off it every day. Literally, since I announced it, and it's coming out on all platforms, well, all mixtape platforms, May 31st.
Oh, very cool.
And I heard a lot of great music. Like, I met a lot of hungry artists that's willing to invest in themselves just for providing a platform to unsigned talent, and which makes me push to do part two, which I'm gonna bring that out in July. I'm going to do a whole series, 1 through 5. Nice. And then I'm also doing a Pass the Torch website. I already paid for the domain name. I just didn't have my graphic designer work on it yet because he's working on so much other things. But the Pass the Torch website will be out. And I'm also doing, I was going to do a Pass the Torch showcase. I'm pretty sure I'm still going to do that, but right now I'm going to focus on my album release party. So what I did, instead of just jumping right into the Pass the Torch showcase, I'm taking about seven different acts off the Pass the Torch, and I'm letting them be the opening acts for my album release party. And due to the fact that Pass the Torch has like 30 songs on it, obviously I'm not going to be able to put every artist on my album release party for the time frame that I have the venue for. So when I'm going to do the ones that don't make the first event that I do, they could actually be on the roster to the next event I do.
Okay. So let's talk about the release show. You mentioned
the show.
The album release show.
Yeah, I'm actually putting that together as we speak. I just got one of the venues. I don't want to say the name because the contract's not signed yet, but I found the great venue that was actually referred to me from Chrissy Roscato. And I actually been to the venue before and for a previous event, and it's definitely a great price. There's upstairs, downstairs. It's in New Hampshire. I feel like that's a great area to have it. And, you know, that's where I want to do one of the events at. And then I have another place in Providence, Rhode Island, which I can't say that neither because I still ain't signed the contract. But, yeah, I'm going to have my album release party in two different, probably three different states. You know, so
that
but
is
it's
really
gonna be
cool.
It's gonna be great. It's gonna the moment you're more than welcome to show your face there. You can come as a media person if you just wanna enjoy yourself, if you wanna drink, you wanna eat, whatever you wish to do, you're more than welcome to come to my album release party. I would definitely keep you posted.
Hey, sounds good.
I was going to do the album release party the same day as my album and my birthday, but my manager, due to the fact that I'm, you know, invested in so much, she just wanted to take the weight off me and just wanted to space the events out. So my album release party won't be happening until, it'll be no later than July.
Okay, cool.
No later than July. She gave me an idea. She said we should do it on July 4th.
Oh, there you go. That's a good time for it, man.
You know, and people's schedules and everything. So, but I have faith in my team. They always come through when I need something done accordingly, and you know, they make it happen. I just tell them what I want or what. And they give me their suggestions. They like, it's not just me. See, people just think it's just Truell. You know, no, it's not just me. Like, I have second opinions. I have advisors.
Oh, cool.
And then, you know, I just what makes sense and what's conducive to what I'm doing. And that's how I move forward.
All right, man. Well, dude, I cannot wait for these shows. They're going to be cool.
Yeah, I'm going to give the people that specific night, I'm going to give them 30 minutes, a 30-minute performance from me. Because, like, I'm very, very confident. My self-esteem is through the roof. But I have to be honest. You can really know when your career is lit when you see all types of people showing you love from all over, from celebrities to just whoever. And it's just like, wow, I people's respecting me from over here, this country and that country. So the support got me hyped.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Like, you're not even my friend on Facebook. You're interviewing me. So like the support is why I can't wait to have my album release party, because I'm ready to pull up and show out.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah. You know, I want to I also wanted to talk to you a bit about the artists who are on the Pass the Torch. Now, how did you, like, find all these people? Did they kind of come to you, or did you kind of know that they were out there?
You just said your own question. They came to me. I put post out. At first, it was just words. So they're looking like, okay, they're clicking the words. Then they're like, okay. So once I put the cover, that's when the slots selling fast, very, very fast. And, once they started seeing me in the studio and I believe doing it, like people from Carolina, South Carolina, like Midwest, from Chicago. Use my platform to my advantage. Like, I have a lot of followers. Like, on Instagram, I'm like 36,000 or something. You know? So, like, once I promote a project like that, people that's my core following gonna gravitate to that. And another reason why it's sold and it's still selling, because you have to be authentic. Like, you could say, like, people could say something to you all day, but if you don't see nothing, how you gonna buy into it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I gave people something official, and it's something that could open up a door for the individual that's purchasing a slot. Because with that slot, I think about it. There's platforms out here like datpiff.com, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They're $400 and up to get on a platform, right? You're only paying $100 a mixtape with me. I'm putting it on all that. I'm putting it on them platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saving you money, and I'm co-signing you. And I'm letting you perform at my album release party free of charge because you invested that $100 with, you know? So, and I love it. It's like a sport. You know how you compare college sports to the pro sports?
Sure.
And then you see, like when you watch a college football, you see them go much harder than NFL
mm-hmm.
because they really want it. So by me providing this platform, I'm getting to see which unsigned artists really want to be in the music industry.
Yeah, definitely, man.
I'm hearing a lot of great talent. It's like phenomenal. The momentum is at an all time high.
All right. Why don't we give a few shout outs to some of the folks on the album? Some of the folks who are going to be featured on it.
Well, Free Joel Santana. Shout out to Joel Santana. He's on my song
mm-hmm.
"Knock 'Em Out." Shout out to Junior Reed. Jamaican Dundada, the original living legend, Kingston, Jamaica's own Rastafarian. Shout out to him. Shout out to his son, Juju Blood Reed. Who else? Shout out to Reefa. He's a platinum Grammy nominated producer. He produced the One Blood record for the game. He actually was the one that produced the record with me and Junior Reed. Shout out to him. Shout out to Ray Royale, me and Terra. There's a lot of shout out to my man Jay Nice. He's on the album too. Like I did a lot of records with big artists. Then some of them I didn't put on the album. I'm putting them on the next project. Like, I did a song with Faith Evans and Joel Santana.
Mm-hmm.
That actually got moved to the EP with me and because, you know, as you know, his incarceration. So it's like, if he's incarcerated, I won't be able to push the record to its furthest potential. So we're waiting for him to get out for us to put that record out.
Okay.
But it's done, though.
Nice.
It's called Feel So Good, and it was by another platinum producer, K-Man. Like, I did so much music for this project. I worked on it for 4 years. Because, like, there was just, like, certain records I did. And it was just saying, that brings us back to when I'm in the mood to do music. Mm-hmm. So there was sometimes I just feel like I did a couple of records that didn't make the album. I'm just like, nah, that's outdated. Or I could do better.
Mm.
You know, I'm very, very critical when it comes to myself.
Oh, yeah?
You have to be your own. You have to be your own.
So,
but I'm definitely, you're going to get the best of me, you and everybody else.
All right. So you talk about being really, like, critical of yourself. Is it hard for you to walk away from a song and say, okay, we're done with this, no more tweaking, it's finished?
How should I answer that? It's not hard for me to walk away from it because I'm big on perfection.
Yeah.
If it's done, you know.
Yeah.
But if in critiquing, then we do it until it's completed. Me, I always say this to every artist or model or video director, actor, anything when you have consumers looking, listening, watching, you have to be able to take constructive criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can't take it, you're in the wrong business.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You have to. Somebody could tell you something's wrong with something. That doesn't mean that the song's not hot. You might have to turn something down. You might have to say something better.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But I love it.
That's good.
I love it.
That's good, man.
I haven't felt this good. Like, I feel like now I'm to the point where I feel like this is for my fans. You always feel like this is for your fans. You're doing this for your fans. This right here, I feel like the fans want me to do. Fans want me to put it out. Because some people really can't just get people to gravitate to them like that. And now I feel like people, they gravitate to me so much and they was patient with me.
Yeah.
There's people that really get fed up with waiting. I always stayed active and I always was putting something out. It may not have been my album. I might have been on this with somebody else and they doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And people stayed patient with me. That's what I really appreciate the most, because it's been 6 years since I released a solo project. But I had my label and I was putting out compilations.
Mm-hmm.
Where I did a compilation called Extended Family. We did 17 songs. I jumped 9 of them. So then I have solo artists where I might do stuff with them, but it was Wiz Truelle project. But we're not fed up with waiting for him. We know when he puts it out, he's going to put it out and it's going to be correct.
Absolutely.
That's where the 4 years come from,
yeah,
of me working on this project. Plus, I have to wait for certain people to get off tour and stuff like that.
Sure.
But the good thing is, my brother, I did it.
It's
it took
done.
Time, but I did it.
Exactly.
I feel so good.
Exactly.
I'm in great. And I'm not gonna front when I got the new. I got the news, like, when I did the record with Faith Evans, Joel Santana, and Amali Ali, I was hyped. I was so hyped about it. I'm still hyped about it because I got it done. I listened to it earlier today, and I'm just like, it's done.
Feels good, huh?
You know what I'm saying? Like, the track is complete. Yeah, I love it. I'm actually, I'll let you hear it. It can't be played on the airways and all that.
Yeah, so, okay.
Like, but I'll let you hear it. It's one of those songs like humanitarian music.
Oh.
Like, you know when you look at old school artists that you could still listen to 20, 30 years later, like Earth, Wind & Fire, Ron Isley,
mm-hmm.
You know, people like that. It just gives that type of feel. Like, when it comes on, it's like a Jackson 5 feel, mm-hmm. because of the production. It definitely brought the best out of me. Faith Evans singing on it brought the best out of me. Like, there's just them artists that you need to do songs with that's going to bring the best out of you.
Cool, man. Cool.
And that's what that song does to me and for my career. So I can't wait to the day that the people get to hear it and it comes to life.
Absolutely.
That's one of my favorite records that I...
Nice, man. Nice. Well,
yes.
All right, dude. Well, dude, it's been awesome talking to you, man. I cannot wait to hear this album. I cannot wait, dude. Culmination of so many years of hard work, and it's done. You get to say it's done. Oh, my God. All right, folks. Well, yes. If you...
Trilogy in the New Beginning, platform, retail stores that still open. You know, some people don't do... A lot of people don't do CDs no more, but I still... My distribution company, they still doing them for me. But June 8th, Trilogy, The New Beginning, Pass the Torch, May 31st, a lot of great talent.
That's right, folks.
To tell you.
That's right. All right, folks. Well, that's going to close out the show. It ended so fast, didn't it? I've got a couple more songs for you from Truelle. And don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook under Citywide Blackout, Twitter, Instagram, Citywide Max. You can listen to us on TuneIn, iTunes, and Podbean, as well as on Blogspot. And don't forget to listen to us every Saturday, 10 p.m. on Boston Free Radio. And as always, keep those ears open.
I'm about to cop a Bentley in the Range Rover. Remix. My diamonds gonna look like a rainbow. L's put me on, so now I got a bankroll. What I look like, living regular? Hell no. We getting it. We getting it. We getting it. Yeah, you know we getting it. We getting it.
Now I'm in the game and I got the flow. Chin gave me what I need, now I'm about to blow. Skull gang in my heart, but I'm vamping dough. Combo get a green light, now I'm trained to go. Trying to get at least 20 racks for a show. Then slide a couple dollars off to my bros. Z, publishing deals, money while we sleep. Count them O's, man, f*** the sheep. My stomach gon' eat, I'm gon' tuck. Hit me, f*** gon' see the G's. Hit you with the so feel the breeze. Can't catch me, I'm way overseas. I'm off the coast and Capri. Defending over there is kinda cheap. Baby girl, you should go f*** me.
I'm about to cop a Bentley in the Range Rover. My diamonds gon' look like a rainbow. Cabo put me on, so now I got a bankroll. What I look like, living regular? Hell no.
We getting it.
What I look like, living regular, hell no.
Show me paperwork. Why I need to get rid of you, cause it's on site. Bad mind boss, my boys. When I'm riding the whips, we riding with them toys. Boy, I don't play that. Here you go, take that. We pros and we acting, so you can't get your face back. I set it up ASAP, my squad, I be yelling it. Beanie Siegel, the niggas, cause the truth, I be telling it. That's more money, more hate, more friends, more fakes, more. So I'll never look you in the face. Mattapan's golden boy. I'm from the city of champions, Boston, so make sure you know it, boy.
I look into their face, into their face, see no captive place. Seems like they last in space, or even last in space. By the way, I look into their eyes, seems like they wanna. Tears of your eyes.